fan. On demand. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights. We're always taking callers for him to hang up on. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, I've been soliciting your tweets, your emails for Jerry Howarth. You've come through, as I expected. You can continue to send your tweets. Use the hashtag Blair Show. My Twitter handle is SNJeffBlair. We have Jerry Howarth, the one and only Jerry Howarth, the voice of the Blue Jays, in studio for the full hour. And Jerry, thank you very much for doing this. Always a pleasure when we get together. And as I say all the time, I know how valuable off days are to people who do this job on a daily business. So thanks very much for joining me. I appreciate it.
Well, you're welcome. I didn't tell Travis McKenzie, who puts this together, I'm only here for 2 minutes, so we'll cram as much as we can in.
That's good. Thanks, Travis. I appreciate you. I appreciate you you informing me about that. We've got Jerry for more than 2 minutes. We've got him for the full hour. 416-870-0590, star 590, 1-888-666-0590. Anything you want to know about the Blue Jays. I've been guessing most of the time. Now we've got somebody who knows what's going on. Before we deal with the Blue Jays, though, Jerry, you heard our discussion in the first hour about the All-Star Game. You've got some of your own ideas for the All-Star Game, and I'm interested in them.
Well, here's my one idea. This is it. And I've always been a believer that I don't think the All-Star Game should determine home field advantage in the World Series. But I also appreciate the fact there's timing. What do you do regarding hotel accommodations, et cetera, et cetera? Now that you have two 15-team leagues and you start interleague play from day one, right? How about we do this? By the All-Star game, the winner of the interleague competition now has home field advantage. And you celebrate that at the All-Star game. Congratulations, American League. You won 50 games and you dropped 45. You have World Series home field advantage. Now it's a done deal. You can do everything else regarding time. You have the proper way of setting up the interleague play competition to make it count, and now enjoy the All-Star game. Get everybody in there and make it the celebrity game that it is. That's just the way I would do it regarding trying to get over that timing. Well, we can't wait till the last game of the season. Okay, make the All-Star game your cutoff point.
Well, you could do this too. You could say, congratulations, American League. You've won 50 games. You've lost 42. Whoever wins this game still gets, if the National League wins this game, they can regain home field. I'm playing with you. No, the home field advantage thing didn't really bother me at first, but I can remember growing up and watching, you know, I can remember having three TV channels growing up. And then the All-Star game, I wanted to see who was there from the Twins. I would watch the game for the introduction. Here come my Minnesota Twins guys. Oh, Dave Goltz. Great. Jeff's happy he saw the Twins player. I'd watch two innings. I'd go to bed. So I get how the American League and National League thing works, and how there's still sort of that little sort of tension, if you want to call it that, competition between the leagues. I would like to see U.S. against the rest of the world, though. I think that would be really cool.
I do, too. And see, you could put the two together. Now, let's have the U.S. against the International League team, and then you've already determined
home field.
Who's got home field advantage, because up to the halfway point, and now the halfway point's almost 100 games. So it's not like we're talking 81 games.
Good point.
We've already got our World Series seventh game candidate by league, and now go out and have fun. Let's see Cespedes against Mike Trout, and let's see what happens, because they're both representing different teams, different countries, and I like that too. One other thought just on the home run derby. How about three strikes and you're out? Instead of seven outs, you have three outs.
Yeah.
That would speed it up. And you and I were talking just a minute ago. For me, anyway, what's better, a crisp 2.5-hour ball game or a 3-hour and 40-minute game? Well, for me, definitely the former. And right now, the home run derby's in the latter category. Let's speed it up. And that's one way to do it. Three strikes and you're out. Move on.
Yeah, I agree totally. We're joined by Jerry Howarth. We have Jerry Howarth in studio for the full hour. 416-870-0590, star 590, 1-888-666-0590. Before we get to the calls, Jerry, your thoughts on, well, we'll call it the first half, even though, as you say, we're well past the first half by now, but the pre-All-Star portion of the Blue Jays schedule, your thoughts on the team and, frankly, your thoughts on what lies ahead for this team.
Well, as I knew I was coming in here this morning, I took a look back at the month of May because that's when the Blue Jays went 21-9. Their first game on May the 1st, they won 7-3 over Kansas City. Then they lost 6-5 to Pittsburgh, 5 runs. Then the next game, they lost 8-6 to Pittsburgh, 6 runs. So they scored 7, 5, and 6 runs in the first 3 games and lost 2 out of 3. Then they come back, start a 5-game winning streak, winning 7-2 against Pittsburgh. Well, later in the 9-game winning streak, Edwin goes off the charts in part of his 16 home run month. But you had Reyes at the top, Melky hitting second, Bautista third, Edwin fourth, Brett Laurie fifth. Point being, they were scoring 6 and 7 runs, winning and or losing because their starting pitching was pretty good too, and it still is. The starters have been tremendous. The bullpen has fallen off for whatever reason, but the hitting right now is the reason why the Blue Jays have gone into their tailspin. And if Edwin and Laurie come back and they're going to be the infusion that they need to get back going, and Alex can maybe add another part to go with those two, it's like getting 3 players back for the stretch run. And it's a division right now that can be had by anybody, and anybody probably now boils down really to the Orioles and the Blue Jays. And guess who finishes the season at Toronto? Baltimore.
And I think we'll get a sense early, Jerry, because the Jays come out of the gate with games against the Rangers and the Red Sox. And, I mean, it seems almost, I have a hard time saying the last place Red Sox, but, I mean, there's a chance for the Jays to make ground up there because Baltimore's got a tough, they've got a tough schedule out of the gate. But I wanted to ask you, when you talked about those 3 players coming back, what do you do if you're Alex Anthopoulos right now? Because my thinking's kind of gone 180 degrees since the injuries have happened. I don't know. If I'm Alex right now, I know a couple of things about this team. I know that next year I'm probably going to need at least one more outfielder, maybe two. I know I may need a second baseman, depending on what the organization thinks of Ryan Goins. If I'm Alex, I'm almost looking at this trade deadline and then 2 weeks of leading up to it is trying to get a guy who addresses those issues, or a player who addresses one of those issues, because that's automatically going to help me this year. If I get a second baseman for 2 years down the road, that's going to help me this year as well. I don't think if you're Alex, Jerry, you go for a rental guy, do you?
No, I don't think you do. However, this is one of those years where anything can happen in the division that they're in. So that, I think, changes things a little bit. I do think with what was set up initially as a platoon system, Francisco at third, Laurie at second, that worked up to a point where then Juan got exposed as far as his strikeouts and his inability to consistently put the ball in play and his below average play at third. But I think if Alex Anthopoulos, between now and July 31st, I'll just throw out one name, Chase Headley, who's a veteran third baseman, National League, with a team that's not doing too well. If Alex could, for the rest of the year, find a replacement for Juan Francisco and leave Brett Laurie at second, now you might end up improving both areas, at third base with someone who's played there before, at second where it'd be a definite infusion of not only offense but defense. Brett can play anywhere. I think that's where Alex has to look. And with the injuries to Edwin and to Laurie, that makes it tough on Alex because really this year, Jeff, with the parity in the game, everybody's looking for one additional or two additional players and or pitchers by the July 31st trade deadline. And you don't want to give up your Pompeys and your kids down there in the minor leagues who are pretty good. You can't really rob that particular area. You've already done it a couple winters ago. So it's a tough situation for Alex, but I do think if he acquired a third baseman and put Laurie at second, you improve in 2 areas right off the top. The outfield is, I think, okay, and I think there's a lot of flexibility there to finish the season, see how far you can get, and then maybe readjust your outfield after that.
What are you seeing from Colby?
You know, disappointment.
Yeah.
I think overall, Colby, the swings and misses, number one, are alarming for someone who's been around as long as he has. Number two, the throwing, both the strength-wise and the accuracy, is the last couple of years disappointing to see. I'm not sure why. And then the energy level and the just kind of going through the game, and maybe that's Colby, but it's not healthy for a team trying to win it and trying to push the accelerator and get more out of everybody. And I think Colby could be much better. And honestly, I'm just disappointed in what I've seen from him, and I think it could be better.
Let's go to the phone lines, 416-870-0590, star 591-888-666-0590. Gary, you're our leadoff hitter. Say hello to Jerry Howarth.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
Good. Very good, Gary.
Jeff, I heard you were going to have Jerry on. I've spoken to you all the time, and I knew I had to make the call once I heard Jerry was going to be on.
Perfect.
Jerry, how you doing, bud?
Very good, Gary. Thank you.
Good. I had a, there's one really big question. I know AA's been on your guys' station a few times in the last couple of weeks. I don't think he's touched upon this, and that was an innings cap on Stroman and Hutchinson. Now, I know a lot of teams, they don't really like to get into an innings cap. You know, we heard what happened with Strasburg and the Nationals a few years back. Now, hypothetically, we're in a pennant race now. We get all the injured guys back, and it's mid-September. And both of these guys are maxed out, or they're one of them is maxed out, and the other one's pretty close to it. What's plan B for this team if arguably Stroman's been one of the better pitchers in the last month for this team, month and a half. What is plan B if one of them is getting close to being maxed out? And one other thing about the All-Star game, I'm one of those who does not like every year there needs to be a tweak here and there. I'm one of those where let's leave it alone for a few years, because even last night I had a hard time adjusting to, oh yeah, there's seven outs now. And next thing you know, MLB, the way that they do things, next year there's going to be like three new changes. And it's kind of hard to kind of have like a, you know, a flow to it every year when you know like every year there's going to be a change. Oh, let's change this. Let's change that. Let's change that. Change for the sake of change is never really good either, right? So I just wanted to know your thoughts on that. And, yeah, I'm a big fan of yours, Jerry. Keep up the good work, bud.
All right. Well, thank you, Gary. Just to start with the All-Star game and the Home Run Derby, I'm okay with change if it's going to make it a little bit sweeter and shorter. And I think the Home Run Derby, even with the hour delay yesterday in the rain in Minnesota, not many people are going to stay up till 11:30 or 12 here on the East Coast just to watch a Home Run Derby. So I don't mind little changes like that. And if they can shorten it and make it short and sweet and crisp, I'm all for that. The game itself, I like it, but more as everybody have fun. We've already decided before that, and the game doesn't factor in as far as who gets the seventh game in the World Series. Regarding Stroman and Hutchinson, in my opinion, I don't think the Blue Jays are looking at a cap and that they're going to max out at a certain number of innings. I think that'll take care of itself. I really do. I think in the next 2.5 to 3 months, the Blue Jays will certainly monitor Stroman and Hutchinson. And guess what John Gibbons has already done? He's thrown in a sixth starter at time. Liam Hendricks has come up and done a pretty good job. So I think they'll be mindful of the innings, but I don't think it'll reach a certain point, Jeff or Gary, where they're going to say, that's it, and now we're going to either go into the last 2 weeks needing a couple wins here for the playoffs or even in the playoffs without those two, because I don't think they can go too far without those two.
You know, Jerry, I've been fascinated with the way the organization's handled Aaron Sanchez this year and to a certain degree Daniel Norris, who, by the way, will be in, I've just been told, Daniel Norris will be in Baseball Central tomorrow with us. But I've been fascinated with the way the organization has used Aaron Sanchez. And I think what's going to happen is you may see Aaron Sanchez up here pretty soon, and you may see Aaron Sanchez making a start or two. And there are ways of monitoring the innings, giving guys an extra day off here or an extra day off there. And the other thing, too, and I think people need to realize this, the July 31st trade deadline doesn't mean you can't make a trade after July 31st. It just means players have to go through waivers. We've seen a lot of teams that will pick up a veteran starter, 34-year-old veteran starter on, you know, middle of August to help out that way. So I think that it's something the Jays are monitoring. You use the right word, they're monitoring, but I don't know if it's necessarily in the forefront of Alex's mind. I think Alex probably thinks, I can probably work around that.
Well, in my opinion, if you're going to try to win a playoff spot this year and get to 90 wins, Aaron Sanchez probably is not your best choice. A better experienced pitcher like Liam Hendricks, to give you an example, would, I think, serve better. Because I remember Sean Nolan and other young kids coming up, and they get lit up. And that's only expected. What, Sanchez, still 21 years old? No matter what he's doing with his release point, et cetera, and getting his innings in Buffalo, and he started in Double A, He's a 21-year-old kid who's never pitched in the major leagues. You need experience. You don't need kids to try to get to the major league level. And then especially if you're trying to get to your first playoff game in 21 years. I like Aaron. I think he's definitely a part of the future. But at this particular point, to bring him up, I don't see it. But now here the Blue Jays just acquired Brett Wallace. I thought that was a good move for an insurance policy at first base. You don't have Edwin. You don't have Adam. What happens if Bautista has a hip problem or groin pull or hamstring, whatever? So that's a good acquisition. But I think what you might see is Alex maybe acquire a veteran pitcher like that too, who maybe could come in like a Hendricks and help out down the stretch.
Yeah, the other thing we don't really talk about that much. I know you and Joe have talked about it an awful lot in the broadcast. And actually, you and Joe, you tweaked onto this very early in the year. I can remember both of you talking about this. You know, we've kind of had this tendency to just look at the bullpen, and it's almost like you don't worry about it. But boy, that, you know, they're 16th in the majors in innings pitched. So it's not like the bullpen is being overworked, and their numbers are not good. A lot of walks. You know, you cover the games. A lot of walks, a lot of home runs, a lot of pitches thrown from that bullpen. That has to be a concern for Alex, too. But I don't know, Jerry, if you're Alex, maybe you think, well, Brett Cecil's healthy. You know, we'll kind of figure this out as we go along. We can maybe fill the bullpen from within, as opposed to going out and adding another arm. But that's kind of emerged as a concern for me. Not so much Casey, but the build-up to Casey.
I think it's something that Alex has to definitely look at. But now when you have injuries and, as we mentioned, Encarnacion, Lowry, Lind, et cetera, and the offense has just dried up, what's your first priority? I think for me it's to get some offense.
Yes.
Maybe improve the defense,
totally,
too, at third base and at second base. So if you can do that with one acquisition and Brett comes back and plays second, I can see that as a happening. Remember, too, in this bullpen, they've had a pretty good track record. You're mentioning the walks. The Blue Jays are 29th in Major League Baseball, most walks, topped only by the Chicago White Sox. And that's where, surprisingly, a lot of that has come from the bullpen. You know, one major loss that the Blue Jays have had here, and it gets overlooked, is Pat Henkin. Pat was such a good bullpen coach and teacher and communicator. And there are exceptional people in this game, and I like who the Blue Jays have. But when you don't have an exceptional person, and he goes to be with his father, that's what makes Pat exceptional, because his father has had cancer and chemotherapy. And what did Pat do? He said, my family comes first. My dad, who helped me grow up and become the man that I am, let alone the player that I was, I want to be by his side. Pat's a major loss here for this team, and I think the bullpen really feels that too. So having said all that, I think the bullpen is sufficient enough to get by, but you need to score more than 2 and 3 runs, and this is what's really hurting the Blue Jays more than anything.
That's very well said about Pat, and I can tell you, I'm not going to say who the reliever was last year, but you could probably guess it's a guy who carries a considerable amount of weight in that bullpen. He's a stand-up guy, and I remember him telling me one time, you know what? He said, it's almost like Pat's a member of the bullpen. He said, we don't even look at him as a bullpen coach. We look at him as a member of the bullpen. Just because, you know what Pat's like? Pat looks like he could go out and throw right now. I mean, he's young at heart. He's a youngish guy, and he looks like he could go out and throw right now. And I found that, and I thought about that comment this year. And I'm not saying that to criticize anybody, but Jerry's right. I mean, Pat Henkin is, in a lot of ways, his DNA is really throughout this organization when it comes to pitching. I mean, you talk to Aaron Sanchez, guys like that, he has always been in their ear when he was a roving instructor, or when he was, when he was essentially charged with sort of keeping track of that team at Lansing. And that's a great point. It's something that hasn't been stressed enough.
Yeah, I'm going to just say this here once because it gives me the opportunity to do it. Pat Henkin, the word I would use with him is exceptional. Mm-hmm. And the word I would use with my partner this year, Joe Siddle, is exceptional. Sometimes you find people in your life like this who just come into your life and they are exceptional people on and off their particular jobs, on and off the field, on and off the microphone. And for me, Pat Henkin and Joe Siddle are both in that category.
Similar personalities in a lot of ways, too.
Yes, they are.
416-870-0590, *591-888-666-0590. Mike in Niagara Falls. You're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. What's up, Michael?
Good morning, Jeff. Good morning, Jerry.
Good morning.
I think Travis should get a raise from Jeff for getting you on for the hour.
Do you think I have that much power around here? How about we work on a raise for Jeff?
Jerry, you've been one of my heroes in baseball since I first heard Tom and Jerry on the radio. My dad's garage with the old tube radio and a picture of the cartoon characters taped to it, Tom and Jerry.
Thank you. That's pretty good.
I have one question that you can answer when I leave. If I'm right or wrong, did Don Drysdale not do commentary for the original Montreal Expos? And B, I have a theory that all announcers that go to TV should pass a test by going to the school for the deaf, or blind, rather, excuse me, for the blind, and having to announce a game so that people can hear a description of the game, of how the pitcher leans in and glares at the catcher and his movements, like the old boxing announcers did, which I think you guys have done for years, and gave the nicknames of the players, like Ron Hunt used to be Pigpen, because they said he wasn't happy till his jersey was dirty. And my last comment, I'm sorry to take up so much time, is I am tired of all the great announcers in baseball getting inducted into the Hall of Fame feet first. I think that you should be inducted, Bob Uecker, while you're still able to give your speech.
Mike, I appreciate the call. I would go along with that.
Well, thank you, Mike, for all your comments. I appreciate that. And let me just start off with Don Drysdale. He was one of my best friends in broadcasting. And I don't know if he was with the original Expos, but he did broadcast with the Expos.
1971 was his he actually started broadcasting with the Expos. I don't know if he was an original.
Probably in 1969 wasn't, but then was after that.
Was Russ the original?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
With Dave Van Horn, Russ Taylor and Dave Van Horn. I met Don because of a couple things. One, broadcasting in the AAA Pacific Coast League with the Angels AAA Club, he worked with Dick Enberg. And for me, when I heard those broadcasts as a young broadcaster with the Angels Top Farm Club, I thought, that's the way it should be. They were one of the first to really introduce a play-by-play man with a former athlete. And Don always used options. He never just said, this is the way it should be. He said, Dick, there's a few things that the manager might think about right now. Or these are a couple of options for a catcher to think about. Or a pitcher might be thinking along these lines. And then Don later was the broadcaster with the Chicago White Sox. And then, sadly, he had his heart attack and he died much too young. But Don was a great person. It was never about him. I just loved who he was and how he went about his business, both as a dominant pitcher and then a very fair broadcaster. And I think that's what an analyst has to be, to appreciate how tough the game is, even though you're watching it from upstairs.
Yeah, and I was just remembering, I was at Olympic Stadium on that night, July 3rd, when Don didn't show up. And he passed away of a heart attack in his hotel room in Montreal. And I can remember the Dodgers people running around trying to find it, because it was not like Don to not be there in time. And he was found in his hotel room in Montreal, and he'd been dead, for according to the coroner, for about 18 hours. And I remember Vin, and I'm just reading it right now. I remember Vin Scully saying, "Never have I been asked to make an announcement that hurts me as much as this one, and I say it to you as best I can with a broken heart."
Well, Don was just a terrific person, and had just married too, and was so happy, and that was his life, and taken away from him. It was a wonderful life up to that point. It reminds me too of John Cerutti dying in his sleep in Toronto here about 10 years ago. Then, Mike, you brought out a great, interesting story for me too to share with the audience here. When you talk about broadcasting and describing it, and maybe radio, and keep it descriptive, when I was in the Coast League, and I love my 5 years. I wouldn't trade those for anything. The first year I went to Phoenix, to our team, the Tacoma Twins, went on to play the Phoenix Ball Club. And there was an organist there, and I didn't know her, but her husband came over and said, "Jerry, would it be okay if my wife, Jenny Ridfield, who's the organist here for the Phoenix Giants, after she plays during the commercial breaks, could she come and sit by you during the innings?" And I said, "Well, sure, why?" He said, "My wife, Jenny Ridfield, is blind, and she would love to watch the game with you so you could describe it for her." So for 5 years, when I went into Phoenix three different times, Jenny would sit right next to me. And that's really, Jeff, where I learned to broadcast as a radio broadcaster, because I was speaking to her. She couldn't see the field, and I described everything for her. It was a wonderful friendship. It made me the broadcaster that I was at that particular point, to be descriptive. So I think what Mike is saying is true. Even though you might move to TV, or even, and you can't do it on TV, but on radio, there's still a lot of room for little words. And I tell young broadcasters, the most important words are right, left, first base dugout, third base dugout. People can see that. Now they're right there with you watching the game. So I always thank Jenny Ridfield for that. And regarding just announcers in general, I'm happy doing what I do, and I know you do too. And after that, you just let kind of everything else take its natural course. As long as you're enjoying the moment, and moments, that's what I've always believed in.
Yeah, as long as you're enjoying showing up to work, that's the important thing. Maryland and Ottawa, you're on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, say hello to Jerry Howarth.
Hi, Jerry. Hi, Jeff.
Hello, Maryland.
This is I'm a first-time caller, and I've just recently found the dial to you, and now every morning I listen to you.
Well, thank you and welcome.
Life is good here in Ottawa, and especially today when I get to talk to Jerry.
Which part of Ottawa are you from, by the way?
I'm right downtown Ottawa.
Okay, because I lived in just on Baseline Road for the longest time when I was in Ottawa, right across from Experimental Farm.
Oh, I know exactly where that is. Yep. And, of course, I'm right behind the Museum of Nature.
There you go.
Right by the Rideau, so it's very, very nice. But anyway, I'm thrilled to be talking to Jerry. He is exceptional to me and always has been, way back in my Sarnia days when I listened to him. In fact, I would turn this, put this TV on mute and listen to Tom and Jerry, and I tend to still do that today.
Well, thank you, Marilyn.
I'm back down to Nova Scotia, and now we're back up here. I'm following my grandkids. My six grandkids. But the reason why I'm calling Jerry is I'm wondering what you think if Double E should go back on third, and they can insert Adam Lynn on that first base, and he be an everyday player.
Well, first of all, Marilyn, thanks a lot for all the comments and following Tom and me over the years, and I really appreciate that. And that's why we do what we do, because we try to inform and entertain our audience for people who enjoy it just like you do.
And you do, that's for sure.
Well, now, thank you. Appreciate that. I think for Edwin, for me, never again third base. That really hurt him in his career. And then when he found first base, all of a sudden, the Blue Jays found a first baseman. Let's put everything else aside. Mm-hmm. They found someone who can play first base. Good footwork, good quickness, good hand-eye coordination. And that's where he began to blossom in all phases of the game. So, no, I think they have to leave him right there. And I think if Adam Lind, as well as he's hit against right-handed pitching, one of the difficulties the Blue Jays have had, of course, they're last in the league hitting against left-handed pitching. So, number one, they need Edwin back, put him at first base. Occasionally he could DH to give him a little breather there too. But the Blue Jays need to find a right-handed hitter in order to complement Adam, or just go out and try to find an everyday designated hitter. I know when Alfonso Soriano was designated for assignment, that appeared to be someone who might be that full-time designated hitter with his experience if Adam wasn't going to come back quickly. But now we understand Adam is going to come back. And I think Alex then might be able to find maybe a right-handed hitter as well to then give you Lynn and that right-handed hitter to get your offense going.
Jerry, let me ask you this, because this kind of plays off what Marilyn question. Marilyn, thank you for the call. People have, Greg's on. Other people have said, why doesn't John Gibbons just keep running Colby Rasmus out there, forget the platoon, put him out there, left-handed, right-handed. Same thing with Adam Lind. And just, that make them everyday players. And, I mean, my argument is, Colby, I don't know. To me, if you've got Colby in the team, you almost have to make him. He almost has to be an everyday player, whether you bat him eighth, ninth, whatever. But Adam's numbers, it's just, you can't go against history, can you? Adam's a guy to you put in against right-handed pitching. That's it.
I think you do. And I think to answer your question a little bit sooner than that, too, regarding John Gibbons, I think he put Rasmus and Lind in there on an everyday basis and tried to see what they could do. And Adam in spring training tried to a different approach against left-handed pitching, but that's spring training. And Adam just unfortunately has been a 200 hitter or less over the last few years batting against left-handed pitching. So what happens with the other team? They work around the hitters in front of them to get their left-hander against Lind. And I am, again, very surprised that Colby Rasmus has been such a swing-and-a-miss guy against all kind of pitching, let alone left-handed pitching. And I think probably when you start to look at, I'm not sure where the Blue Jays are going. I think they'd love to have Colby do something here to finish this year and help them with the playoffs. I think after that, they probably have to look at Anthony Gost and say, are we going to get something for the Roy Halladay trade? They still really haven't had anything yet. And Anthony might be as close to anybody who can do it, but the question is, can he hit? Can he put the ball in play? It's been a little disappointing that way, too. So it's not a good situation. I'm not sure exactly how they're going to do it. I do think probably they have to see Colby Rasmus in situations where he's pretty much an everyday player, but against tough left-handed pitching, I don't know what they're going to do because they do find themselves exposed in that area, and especially with him and Lind in the same lineup.
Yeah, it's. I don't think you can overestimate how much Anthony Gose's stutter step development has really hurt this organization. Because there are a lot of people in the organization that they want him to be the everyday center fielder. I mean, they do. That's flat out.
Well, I think he would be the everyday center fielder, but his offense just has been lacking. Now, this year, little incremental changes, more walks, fewer strikeouts, working on his bunting. But still, for Anthony, that inability to put the ball in play and use the whole field and then take advantage of his quickness has hurt him. And does that mean that he deserves to play every day, too, to try to find that out? I think the Blue Jays are getting closer and closer to that. And what I do like with him, his energy level, his desire, all those little intangibles. Now it's just a matter of performance, but I do think that they want to see Anthony grow into that job. He's still only 23, and he's got a chance to be successful. Brett's only 24. Those are the kids you have to kind of hope that they're your future.
Yeah, and as long as Colby's defense is so-so, I mean, the one thing Anthony Gose can hang his hat on, and the one thing you can hang your hat on with Anthony Gose is he's going to get to the balls, and he's going to throw to the right base.
Yeah, he's quicker. He gets a good jump off the ball. His throws are stronger and more accurate than Colby's, and those are key things for him. It's just the offense. Now, where's Colby's offense? Well, that's hurt him too. So it's one of those situations, Jeff, with Alex. What do you do when you have so many little deficiencies to try to get to the playoffs for the first time, and then you have some key injuries? If those injured players can come back and help out, then that makes things so much easier.
416-870-0590, *591, 888-666-0590 is the hour of Howarth. Back with more of Jerry Howarth, back with more of your calls. This is the Jeff Blair Show, and this is Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Cooler than Math Club, and almost as cool as Chess Club, The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, 416-870-0590, *591-888-666-0590. Let's get to your calls. We have Jerry Howarth in studio. Don't want to waste any time. Andy, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Go ahead, Andy.
Hi, Jeff.
Hey.
Nice to talk to you, sir. Nice to talk to you, Jerry. I kind of have a long-winded explanation of my point, if you don't mind.
Okay.
When Double A came in here, his preaching to the press corps was that he was going to build the organization from the minor league system up, and I was all for that. I thought it was absolutely the way to go, same way as Tampa Bay, St. Louis, where they promote from within. What he did with the trade for Dickey and for Johnson, Burley, and Reyes was he depleted the farm system. Most of the assets that were worth anything were gone with that deal. Since then, he's put together a good, solid team on the field if they're all healthy. But the problem with that theory is, based on history of this team, 100% health is not going to happen. These guys are, somebody somewhere is going to get injured. Without a farm system to call up adequate replacements and have them on the bench, you need to spend some money to get some veteran backups, because I cannot emphasize enough, you need backups on the bench for every single position. If
Let me just interrupt for a minute. Who has those veteran backups? The New York Yankees have a ton of money. They don't have veteran backups.
And where are they in the standings?
Exactly.
I'm not going to argue with the fact that if you're a bad team, you don't need veteran backups. But you've got people have this idea. Aspirations to win.
Andy, people have this idea that every team in baseball has got a 27, 28-year-old veteran backup stud player ready to take over at positions. They don't.
You don't need a stud, Jeff. You need a backup that's a suitable replacement that's not going to hurt you automatically by taking the field. Mark DeRosa was there last year. That was a good backup. He was willing, he played multiple positions. Since they lost DeRosa, since they lost Hesturis, what have they done to replace those guys? Kawasaki, Goins, all these guys are failing. And if you have
Goins is a young guy. Goins isn't being groomed to be a backup. Goins is a young guy that was given a shot at second base.
But you should have had a backup in place if it failed.
They had Meiser as Turris and he got hurt.
And how did you replace him? They haven't. That's my point. Now my question.
Brett Laurie at second base for a while. But anyhow, go ahead. Continue.
My question, anyway, is if you're going to not have a farm system that is adequate enough to replace injuries, and you have to spend money, is Rogers willing to spend money? Because I don't believe Alex is so naive as to think he's going to win with this crew without getting backups.
All right, Andy. We'll get to Jerry. Jerry.
Well, when I hear Andy, I think Andy doesn't realize how complicated running a baseball team is. It's all easy from Andy's standpoint. And I'm just going to be a little critical right there. Andy sees it in black and white, and it's not black and white. Andy sees things that he wished would happen, and a lot of things have happened. And then at the bottom line, when you start to bring up members of your farm system, trade members of your farm system, what are you trying to do? You're trying to give yourself a chance to win. I thought last year with that trade and trades that they made, there were situations that evolved that took away from that opportunity. Now, this year, the Blue Jays have a chance, and Mark Burley's a big part of that, and hopefully Jose Reyes is a big part of that, too. R.A. Dickey's a big part of that. So there's three right there that Alex acquired in order to try to do that. Now, on the farm system, everybody now wants still some of those kids that the Blue Jays have, and so it's not depleted. It's just real easy on the surface for fans like Andy or bloggers or tweeters to say this, this, and this. And it's not that easy. It's a lot more difficult. So I think when you look at it in the long run, Jeff, and you see what Alex has done, is it a perfect scenario? No. Is it a very poor one? No. It's somewhere in between, and the chances still of this year of getting to the playoffs are good because of some of the players that he did acquire a couple years ago. And where are the kids now that he's given up in return? Well, Henderson Alvarez looks pretty good. Travis Darno, not quite sure. Echevarria looks pretty good at shortstop. But those are the kids that I don't think we're going to give you this particular run that you have this year. And after 21 years, you're trying to do your very best to give yourself and your fans an opportunity to get to the playoffs. And I think Alex has done that. And so it's real easy to criticize, but it's another thing to see what's happening where even myself, yourself, we don't know what's going on for a lot of situations like this that make it just seem like on the surface not what it is. But I think it's better than what Andy portrays.
Yeah, and you know, and I always make this point. Of the players that were traded, who has the Jays in first place right now? Henderson Alvarez. He's going to the All-Star game. Travis Darno. I don't think Travis Darno is this organization's starting catcher. Noah Syndergaard's hurt. As a matter of fact, the Mets are looking to trade him. His name has been mentioned in deal for Starlin Castro. Jake Marisnyk, he may turn out to be a fine player at some point. But none of these guys, and Adani Hecheria, tremendous defensive shortstop. They don't have you in first place. So, you know, here's the thing about prospects. You're going to read a lot about prospects. You're going to hear a lot about them. They don't all turn into all-stars. And just because you think your prospects are good doesn't mean other teams think that your prospects are good. So I'm always kind of leery of talking too much about prospects. And the other thing, you know, look at organizations that have had success. One of the things they've done is they have traded prospects to address pressing issues. And, you know, and as far as organizational depth goes, there is this myth out there that everybody has a guy capable of stepping in and giving you 300 at-bats, triple-A or on the bench. They don't.
Well, look at it from this standpoint, too. Of the five starters, Marcus Stroman and Drew Hutchison, they're doing a pretty good job. Yeah. And so those starts and innings that they're putting together, not only now to help out, and they have helped out, but for the future as well. So it's always a trade-off. Never easy to be a general manager. A lot of things going on, and ideally you'd like to see this improved, that improved. But overall, at least this year, the Blue Jays are in a position to win a playoff spot.
Jerry Ryan Baker writes in, how about firing John Gibbons and hiring Ozzie Guillen?
Well, let's talk about John Gibbons a little bit here, too, because when the Blue Jays were 21-9 in May, and they had Reyes and Cabrera, Bautista, Edwin, Lurie all clicking, and they were just off the charts, I saw some of the bloggers and tweeters, John Gibbons, manager of the year. So, again, it's a fickle fan base, too. It can go back and forth. It's not John Gibbons. It's the players. It's the performance. It's the pitchers. And when you take out kind of the heart and soul of some of those areas we just talked about there, i.e. Edwin and 16 home runs there in May, and Brett Lurie and the energy provided, and playing second base, too, in a different role for him, and also the great defense that he provided at third and getting on and driving in some runs, it's always player performance oriented. I think John's doing a very good job. And again, he kind of goes with the flow and goes with the opportunities of letting his players play, pitchers pitch, coaches coach, and is not the manager. Mm.
John in Toronto, very quickly, you're on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Well, I don't want to talk about trades because enough's been said about that. It just frustrates me. But I want to talk about Ryan Goins, who I know is one of Jerry's favorites. And he's hitting well down in the minors right now. And his defense is incomparable. He saves you probably 60 runs a year, and even if a ninth hitter in the majors gets 50 RBIs, he's going to save you way more than that with his glove. So, well, I don't know why they don't bring him up. Why?
Well, I took a look at Ryan's numbers as well, and now he's up to about 286. But the problem here for Ryan, and he's defensively, he's the best second baseman I've seen in a Blue Jays uniform since Alomar. I'm going to just say that, and I'll say it again. But offensively, the splits are too dramatic. He's hitting close to 300 against right-handed pitching and about 205 against left-handed pitching. And that has hurt Ryan considerably. And if Ryan could somehow balance that out a little bit and become a solid 280 hitter in the minor leagues where those numbers were pretty comparable on both sides of the plate, then I think you'd have your second baseman. But I think right now those splits are too dramatic, especially for a team last in the league in hitting against left-handed pitching. So the offense isn't quite as strong as you'd like to have it, where then you can go with Ryan Goins and his defense. But his offense has to improve, too, at the minor league level against left-handed pitching.
Jerry, it's always great to have you in here. I wish we had about another hour, 2 hours to talk about this, but we'll get you back at some point soon before the end of the year.
Thank you very much. I always enjoy coming in here when Travis gives me an email. It's come into the studio. I'm happy to do that because of you. You're a great host, so thanks a lot.
Jerry Howarth, the voice of the Blue Jays, and going to enjoy a couple of days off Friday. The Jays get back at it Friday against the Texas Rangers, and then our old friend John Farrell and the Boston Red Sox come into town. Always a pleasure to see John.
Yeah, it will be fun to see Brian Butterfield and some of the others, too. And, yeah, the Red Sox is funny. Last, first, maybe last again. You don't see that too often.
Yeah, my heart bleeds for him. Jerry, thanks so much for doing this.
You're welcome.
Jerry Howarth, ladies and gentlemen. When we come back, we're going to shift focus to basketball. Actually, another one of Jerry's loves. Dave Zarum is a staff writer for Sportsnet magazine. He's going to join us in studio. Sportsnet.ca has got a terrific series going on CIA Bounce, which is, of course, the AAU program that has basically become Canada's pipeline to the NBA. A lot of pros to it, and I mean that as a, partly tongue-in-cheek, and there's some cons to it as well. And Dave Zarin will join us when the Jeff Blair Show continues on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.